that Tiger Swan used was also one that seemed to be much more geared from, you know, its experience in war zones in Iraq and Afghanistan, and referring to the water protectors as jihadists, and essentially, you know, seeing this as a war zone situation and treating it that way.
Antonio, we have to wrap up this discussion, but I'd like to ask you to stay with us and we'll post the continuation of the discussion, what this means for fossil fuel industry resistance, who is the founder of Tiger Swan, Jim Reese, and this question of whether he's being considered for FBI director, and also the relationship between Tiger Swan and Blackwater. We'll discuss this and post it online at democracynow.org. Antonio Juhas, oil and energy journalist. We will link to her piece on paramilitary security tracking and targeting no-DAPL activists as jihadists at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Renee Feltz, Laura Gottesdiener, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, our public affairs show here. We talk about the events of Dearborn and the surrounding areas only, unless, of course, it's an issue that matters to us as well as the rest of the world. Obviously, climate change, as discussed in Democracy Now!'s show today, is very, very important to people in Dearborn and Detroit and around the world. So we don't have to talk about that because you just heard Democracy Now! If you're listening to our podcast and say, I only heard the last few seconds of it, so I guess I missed it. Remember, they have a website and they have all of their shows archived there. That's why we don't have to do it on our site. And it's democracynow.org. Just that simple. Democracynow.org. And you can listen. They have shows actually 5 days a week. They're performed live in New York City, usually, sometimes elsewhere, at 9, from 9 to 10 a.m. and then, or is it 8 to 9? 8 to 9 every morning, Monday through Friday. And so it's almost immediately available for you to listen to after 9 a.m. here in Dearborn any day of the week. So, and you can go back and listen to individual shows, too. If there's a special guest that you wanted to catch an interview with, that's all indicated on the website that who was on what show. Highly recommend that to finding out an alternative take on things that are happening in the world that, you know, the news networks, for whatever reason, I'm not going to speculate, don't deem important enough to carry. And it's things different. And I think it's a very balanced presentation of those topics, my humble opinion. Who am I? I'll mention in a second. The topics that aren't covered in the major media and in our newspapers, too. My name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor here at WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and happy to be with you today. Taking a look at the newspapers first. We only have two weekly newspapers left in Dearborn, and none of them have full-time reporters. So stories are not many of them, and sometimes they're just press releases that are turned around, such as this one, but it's still important to mention. I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago that our current president, Stan Jensen, here at Henry Ford College, has announced that he will be retiring at the end of next year, June 30th, 2018, and it seems to be something that's catching, I guess, that retirement thing, because now the University of Michigan Dearborn Chancellor, similar to our president in terms of being the top administrator in residence, if you will. He's announced, Daniel Little is his name, and he's announced that he will be retiring on June 30th, 2018 also. So maybe they'll have a going away party together or something, you know, just save money, have better food and drinks or something if they do it together. But Daniel Little has served as the school's chancellor since the year 2000. So he's been there a long time. I think it says in the article here in the Press and Guide that he has served longer than any other chancellor in the history of U of MD. So he's been there for, well, it will be for 18 years. President Jensen will be 6 years or 7 years when he finishes. But both of them have had distinguished careers. And so we wish them both well. But there'll be a change of the guard at the top for those two major colleges in Dearborn area. And, of course, we're a four-year school, too, now. Well, at least for one program. And we hope for if the legislature ever gets out of their petty bickering, they will also allow us and a couple of other community colleges in the state who have fantastic programs in the allied health area, including nursing, to become four-year institutions for those that program, too. They've talked about it. It's still in committee or something. And it just makes total sense. And even all of our legislators agree. So if they all agree, what are they doing with their time up there in Lansing, huh? Let's get it passed. And not for our benefit, but because there is a desperate need for allied health professionals, and especially for people with four-year degrees who have more background and more training and so on. And the best people need to get into the allied health areas, which are desperate for finding these people. So good programs, and they need to be four-year schools. Okay, also on the front page of the Press and Guide, it was also a story in the Times Herald this week, but not on the front page. Shame on them. The 2017 Teacher of the Year Awards recognize exceptional educators. And that happened back on May 24th. Today, did I mention? I didn't mention. Always do at the start of the show. Today is June the 2nd, 2017. Yes, here we are, June 2017. So exciting. And how do they get these awards? Well, they're nominated by the children they teach. So that's kind of cool. And Alberta Muirhead Teacher of the Year Awards celebrated its 20th anniversary, honoring Julie Spencer of the Henry Ford Elementary School in the pre-K to second grade category, Nagwa Ali of Maples Elementary at the third to fifth grade level, Elam Barbat of Salina Intermediate School at the middle school level, and science teacher Thomas Brown of Dearborn High at the high school level. And some of the people that nominated Spencer, by the way, said she was praised with fun learning games and a generous classroom library and for how they read aloud and acted out stories in full costume. There's all kinds of positive quotes about all these people, and teachers don't get recognized enough in our society for the great work that they're doing for our next generation, the leaders, hopefully, of our society. We're not here for ourselves. We're here for our kids, I think. We're here for the next generation or two. And hopefully we don't muck up the world too much, to use a European term. I think it's a British term. We don't want to muck up the world too much and as a some sort of a present for them for when they're in positions of power. So congratulations. Obviously, I think the best way to reward all of our teachers for a job well done, all of them, is to pay them more money and give them better pensions, since pensions have been cut by, Governor Snyder a few years ago. Teachers don't deserve cuts, especially those who are already retired, like myself. All right. Okay. There's my conflict of interest in that story. But congratulations to all the winners of the 2017 Alberta Muirhead Teacher of the Year Awards. And thanks to everybody that put on that ceremony at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center on the 24th of last month. I want to say welcome to a new farm market manager. That is the manager of the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market that happens every Friday. Again, started a couple weeks ago in the library behind the Bryant, in the parking lot of the Bryant Library, just off Michigan Avenue, just north of Michigan Avenue in West Dearborn. And that's from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. every day. every day, every Friday. That day is Friday. Yes, every day if it's Friday. She also is coordinating, and this, and again, this is a program that is, and she works within the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce, too, that appointed her. Her name is, did I mention her name? I hope so. It's one of those days. Jean Smith. Jean Smith. But she'll also be overseeing training and supervision for the market and coordinate West Dearborn's downtown development days, Friday night's music and food truck rallies, trick or treat, small business Saturday, shop small events, and Dearborn Restaurant Week. So pretty much responsibilities year round. Those events go throughout the year. In fact, always something to do there. And she has extensive experience as a farmer, vendor, and market manager. And so she especially has the insight to further grow the market, which is in its 10th year. Highly recommend you check out the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market any Friday, but not June 30th. That's the Labor Day weekend. Any Friday between now and October 6th, from 9 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon. Turning those pages on the air, as we are wont to do here at WHFR.FM, the station making waves, on the new WHFR Journal show, Henry Ford College here is announcing upcoming shows. First of all, Almost Maine is the next theatrical presentation, and that opens June 15th. Now, next week, Friday, on the 9th, we expect to have a few of the people who are responsible for that production to come in and talk about Almost Maine, because it's not one of those things they made a Hollywood movie out of yet. And it looks to be a great story. But coming up even further down the road, because they're in the planning always for the next couple of ones, the next one coming up will be August 3rd to the 13th in Adria Auditorium here in our Mackenzie Fine Arts Center, main campus, Henry Ford College. It'll be Molly Newman's play Shooting Stars, set in the early 1960s, about a women's basketball team who play in the style of the Harlem Globetrotters for laughs. It's also about the sexism of the era. Of the 1960s, and the expectations for women athletes. So I wonder what that sound like. They bounce basketballs on the stage, the Adre. I guess they'd have to add some excitement. Well, that's going to be loud, believe me. It's always loud. You don't realize it if you're in a basketball court, auditorium, performance area, but it's. But we'll see how that works out, and that's going to be August 3rd to 13th. Begins over homecoming weekend, by the way, which everybody knows about here in Dearborn. It's in Dearborn's Ford Field on the 4th, 5th, and 6th of August. Also coming up in November, they're going to do a musical, which will be enjoyable by the whole family, but especially the kids, written by Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flattery, Seussical, the musical. So based on the stories of Dr. Seuss, that should be a lot of fun. That's from November 10th to 19th. So if more information, you can always go to theater, that's T-R-E, theater, T-R-E, spell it in last three letters, T-R-E. It's not a misspelling. It's the classy way to say theater, to write it, to spell it. And that's theater, T-R-E, .hfcc.edu. We'll have some people from Almost Maine here to talk about the play, and maybe you want to make that part of your summer routine too. For it's only two weekends, starting on the 15th. Looking at the Dearborn Times Herald, the only story in it, I'm going to grab a copy that I printed out, I think, from somewhere else here. Let me see where it is. Here it is. Because the pressing guy picked it up, but they don't have it in the paper this week. So congratulations to the Dearborn Times Herald. They scooped the pressing guide on this one. We did a story a couple weeks ago about how one of their current Dearborn Heights City Council persons, Thomas Berry, had announced his resignation. He did that on May 16th. Well, he's now decided, after some contemplation, that he is choosing to finish the remainder of his term. but won't seek re-election despite having his name on the ballot in the August 8th primary election. At the time when he resigned, he said, "I love the city, I enjoy doing what I did, but I need to turn inward. I decided that maybe resigning today was not the most responsible thing to do, and the most responsible thing to do is to tough it out." I think his term goes until the end of the year, by the way, folks, if he doesn't resign again. Because you can resign more than once, I guess. I don't know, I assume. He mentions here, and this is something for all the candidates that are looking for office locally. He says, "One of the biggest pains in public service," this is Thomas Berry, "one of the biggest pains in public service is the sacrifice a person has to make of himself and of his family. Unfortunately, I don't feel that I'm in the position to give you 110%. And I think that's unfair for me to stand before a group of people and say, if you give me your money, if you vote for me, I'll give you 110% of my time. It's lying to the people. It's cheating. My conscience won't let me do that." Unquote. Well, first of all, I would say he doesn't have to give 110%. 100% would be fine. So, okay, you can lower your standards, Mr. Berry, 100%. And I'm sure he doesn't forget, even though he considers it, I guess, a full-time job for him. It's a part-time job, and it only pays as a part-time job. So almost nobody can exist as a local council person on what they get for the money. And of course, the minimum, which some of our council persons do, is to maybe glance over very quickly the agenda for the meetings, which usually happen only once a month for a couple of hours, and sit at the meeting, voting. You don't have to say anything. So that, I mean, that's the minimum. Now, that's not totally doing the job correctly. I mean, you should be asking questions. You should be responding to special requests from the community who might be calling you on the phone, leaving messages for you saying, "Can you help me with this problem on my street in this case, Dearborn Heights?" So everyone in public office has a tough job to do, and if they do it right, but I don't think they have to give 110%. 100% would mean they're available day and night, every hour of the day and night if needed. And unless there's a major crisis, that's not necessary. And besides, even the cities only see it as part-time because they only pay it as part-time. So I think Mr. Berry is stressed out because his comments show that he's definitely overstating the situation of a council position. But good for him for feeling that he has to make a full effort, an honest effort, and that he is having trouble doing that, but he's going to tough it out for another, what is it, if it goes to the end of the year? I'm not sure when they change over, but it goes to the end of the year. He's going to tough it out for another, 7 months? That's a long time to tough it out. If you're already thinking you're personal life and your family life is being compromised. Well, good luck on that, but that's what he said. So he says, I hope you respect the fact that although my name, again, this is Thomas Berry in Dearborn Heights, sits on the ballot, that you punch somebody else's ticket. That's if you have punch cards, of course, because they're far more deserving and ready to serve, he said. And I don't necessarily think that's true. Just because they had a petition and put it on there, that doesn't mean they're going to do 100%, much less 110%. That's up to you as voters to find out about. And we will remind you again that there's a candidate forum for Dearborn Heights. And it is coming up for city council and mayor. For all the candidates, they'll each get, maybe a big 5 minutes altogether to present themselves and answer a couple questions from the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. That'll be Thursday evening, June 22nd, starting at 6:30 p.m. for city council candidates and 8 p.m. for the mayor. And both those forums will be held in the city council chambers, Dearborn Heights City Hall. As long as I'm talking about candidate forums for the city of Dearborn, same week but earlier, Monday night, June 19th, 6:30 p.m., city clerk candidates, 7:30 p.m., the mayoral candidates. Wednesday, June 21st, 7 p.m., city council candidates, and that's because there's 16 of them. So at 5 minutes each, a couple hours there, but nonetheless, those are very important. And both of them will be recorded by CDTV for City of Dearborn, and all of the forums will be streamed from their website, cityofdearborn.org. And in Dearborn Heights, the forums will be recorded by WDTH, which is their cable television people, and they're going to stream from their Dearborn Heights YouTube page. So there's no reason for us here at WHFR to try to get an audio version. I do intend to be there in person, hiding in the back somewhere, to give you my twist and turn on all of those candidate forums on Friday, the 23rd of June. It'll be a busy week, that's for sure. But Dearborn Heights, people of Dearborn, you need to go and look at these people in person, not just to watch the video, because a lot of things happen that the cameras don't show you, and it always you get the human element that you often can't get through recorded media. Okay, so there's the word on that. Very interesting that a council person resigns and then unresigns and is going to tough it out for another 6 months or more. Okay. Press and guide from this last Wednesday, May 31st. We just want to do a brief shout out to a friend of ours, a professional colleague of a competing telecommunication institution, and that is Dick Kernan. I have a little story here in the press and guide about how he's a Dearborn native, Dick Kernan, and he is a veteran of radio. His first claim to fame, anyway, was being the very first program director at WRIF when FM, this is in the late 1960s, became its own separate and significant medium and became more popular than AM, too. He hired Arthur Penhallow, the DJ who's famous for his trademark baby growl. Okay, but he moved from that, and he has been extremely active with the Specs Howard School of Media Arts in Southfield for many, many years. And he's been with the school for 45 years, and of course, 60 years broadcasting somehow, or part of the broadcasting industry in Detroit. So congratulations to you. He comments that he's 79 years old and comes to work 5 days a week. And his boss, Specs Howard, who's got a picture of himself there also with Dick on the in the story, on the front page of the press and guy. Specs is 93 and comes to work every day. Does that include Saturday and Sunday? Just like yours truly, I've been with Henry Ford College almost 50 years now, and with the radio station since, before we were on the air, planning to be on the air, from 1976, so 41 years in broadcasting, if you will, somehow here. And we have to admit, Dick and Specs, that we're not digging ditches. Okay, that's maybe why we can come to work every day of the week and survive to a ripe old age. As long as our mouth still moves, that's the important thing. So congratulations on that recognition, getting on the front page. Very good PR job there. And, move into the... there's one more. Yes, there's another one here. And maybe Gene Smith was involved with this too. I don't know. Maybe it's the rec department of Dearborn. In any event, 2017 Jazz on the Avenue series is starting up again this summer here in Dearborn. Just keep that in mind. More information, of course, on cityofdearborn.org. But the first concert won't be until July 12th. It's a free summer concert series, and it runs Wednesday nights through August 16th at Dearborn City Hall Park. That's the corner of Michigan Avenue and Schaefer Road. So the City Hall Park is where Art Space is now. You got that? So City Hall Park is still called that, even though it's not by our new City Hall, not next to our new City Hall building, which is called the Dearborn Administrative Center. So it's going to be the place they've always had these Jazz on the Avenue concerts in East Dearborn in the park located at Michigan Avenue and Schaefer Road. Of course, Alexander Zonchuk, the flutist, is going to open the music series. And let's see, Urban Jazz Coalition, Lynn Roundtree, Lady Sunshine, the X Band, a favorite of ours at WHFR, one of the artists that have performed on one of our CDs that are still available, by the way, local blues artist, Matt Marshak, and all, and again, the whole series will finish with Alexander Zonchuk's All-Star Band. So, fun thing to do. They start, when did they start? What time? Well, they start on July 12th, Wednesdays, but it doesn't say a start time. In fact, the story is cut off. That's probably why it's not there. It's a shame on you, press and guide. It says, Dearborn City Hall Park. No, nothing. It's gone. And they show a picture of Thornetta Davis performing there, but that's not this year. She's going to be performing for us on June 25th at the historic Hastings Street Ballroom. And we hope you can attend that. I'm going to give you information about that right now. Listen to this exciting promotional announcement about it coming from our blues DJ, Kitty Love. Get up.
Please join WHFR for summertime fun with great music, good food as WHFR.FM. Independent non-commercial radio 89.3 and the Detroit Blues Society present Ladies Sing the Blues at Hastings Street Ballroom, 2 p.m. till 6 p.m. on Sunday, June 25th. Thornetta Davis. Eliza Neals with special guest Howard Glazier.
Trying to put a jinx on me. I wear an evil eye so you can't even see. Got your number, got your plan. I'm a voodoo woman with a cross in my hand. Voodoo woman with a cross in my hand.
And Alicia Marie. Ladies Sing the Blues on Sunday, June 25th, 2 p.m. till 6 at the Hastings Street Ballroom, 715 East Milwaukee in Detroit. $15 general admission for adults 21 and over. Smoky Roads Barbecue and beverages also available for extra costs. Please join WHFR, the station making waves.
So I hope you're excited by that. Sunday, June 25th from 2 to 6 p.m. We're going to all be there at Hastings Street Ballroom in Detroit. Look it up on Google. It's a great facility. Be great to be indoors on that day and eating barbecue and being with friends. It's going to be a big concert. This is not a small venue. This is good size, and we're, as the announcement mentioned, we're partnering with the Detroit Blues Society to make this possible for you. Otherwise, we couldn't afford doing it on our own and still trying to make a little bit of profit, which is important for us because even though we're nonprofit, we have bills to pay. Imagine, yeah. And if we don't pay them, then we can't continue because the college is not going to pay all of our bills. They give us a wonderful, secure, small stipend. But we still have to raise 60, 70% of the funds for the station ourselves, you know. So maybe you can come there. It's $15 a person, 21 or older. It's going to be great fun. You'll hear more about it, obviously, on this channel between now and then. All right, turning to other stories in this area. Oh, my goodness. He's reaching away. He's sliding away from the microphone. Here we go. I should just have a microphone on my headset, right? And wherever I go, I can just keep talking. Okay. I've got the City of Dearborn newsletter, which comes out by email every week. And if you get on their email list, cityofdearborn.org, I'll send it right to your computer. And it's all the stories there. You can print it out or whatever, but it really keeps you up to date beautifully. From the City of Dearborn's position, you know, their perspective on things. process for garage sales in Dearborn. If your neighborhood wants to do a garage sale, or even just you alone, how to get a permit. So that's information's in there. They're doing a bike sharing thing. When we had Dave Norwood, the City of Dearborn Sustainability Coordinator, on the show a couple weeks ago, he mentioned we're getting into that. So downtown Dearborn will unveil a new bike share system in conjunction with, well, a bunch of sponsors. And the partner that's providing these bikes that you can borrow, I think for a small price, though, they'll be located probably in East and West Dearborn, but the article doesn't say. But the partner is called Zagster, Z-A-G-S-T-E-R, and you can probably look those up on the internet, look that company up to find out the details. But that means if you happen to find yourself in East or West Dearborn, for a small fee, you can take one of the bikes, ride it out and about, and then return it to those racks when you're done with it. They'll make a nice, fun day. Homecoming news. Homecoming, I mentioned, is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, August 4th, 5th, and 6th at Ford Field Park here in Dearborn. And they suggest you register now for the Cornhole Tournament. Big-time tournament. Coming, $25 a person. 18 years of age or older. This is a big-time adult thing, the Cornhole Tournament. And I'm still not clear what a cornhole tournament is. Someone in the studio said it's tossing beanbags into a hole on a box. So you want to pay $25 to compete, either socially or competitively. There's cash prizes. Doesn't say it's $1 million or anything, but there's cash. So anyway, you got to register in advance for that. Also, they're doing a 5K race. So for those people that don't know the metric system, that's 5 kilometers, which I think is about 3 miles. I'm just guessing here. I think it's about a 3-mile race. It's good to see somebody moving towards metric. I thought we were supposed to do that back in the 60s because it makes so much sense. Why? Because the whole world does metric. And what about our car companies? You say, well, it's going to be difficult. They got to switch over all their screws and nuts and bolts. No, they're already doing that. It's already metric. Why? Because it's a worldwide market for cars. They're not going to make two different sizes of screws, nuts, and bolts for their automobiles worldwide. Of course not. So it's just crazy that in the schools and the rest of the country, we're not in the metric system. I know. You say, but that was talked about years ago. We just decided not to do it because why should we? Well, because everybody else is on it. Make it so simple. Just like I've been to England and to Australia, and there are just two major countries there in the world that are driving on the wrong side of the road. Well, not to them, okay, but they drive on the left side of the road. We drive on the, in the whole world, except for England, the British Isles, the British Kingdom, what's left of it, and Australia, they drive on the left side of the road. And it works either way. I mean, it does. You just learn to adapt. But if you're a tourist, oh my gosh, you go crazy for the first couple miles. I remember my first time in England driving left side of the road. The roads are a little narrow, some of the older roads, and brick walls come right up to the edge of the road. So had a little mirror on the side of the car that was removed. very embarrassing. Right after I get out of the rental place, you know, and quarter mile down the road, the mirror's ripped off because I was too close to the side there. But I was looking at the right side. You know, I kept looking because that's the side I'm used to looking at. Okay. So 5K. Congratulations to the City of Dearborn for doing that in a metric way. And all kinds of things happen in Dearborn all the time, of course. Dearborn Public Library celebrates the 20th anniversary of Harry Potter. Okay. Those books. A whole series. Forget about the movies. But the books were a phenomenon, unlike any other in the history of literature, and read by young people and adults, and amazingly addictive and exciting adventure stories. Banned by some church groups, by the way. It's teaching kids magic. You don't want to do that, huh? If there is any such thing. There is magic in the world. If only we'd be able to find it, somebody said. Anyway, That's coming up on June 26th. That's great fun. And yes, it was a great way as an English teacher of literature and language years ago. I have to say it was a great thing for J.K. Rowling to write that series, because so many young people and so many adults got back to reading. And we're not doing enough of that. On June 22nd, and unfortunately this is the night of the Dearborn Heights Candidate Forum, but we're having a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, Glenn Frankel, make a presentation at the Henry Ford Centennial Library at 6:30 p.m. Unfortunately, the same time as the Dearborn Heights Candidate Forum starts. But you could see that later on YouTube, but I don't think they're videotaping Glenn Frankel. Okay. He won the Pulitzer Prize for International Reporting. His newest book is about the movie High Noon. It is called High Noon, The Hollywood Blacklist and the Making of American Classic. Great Western movie. Gary Cooper in it. And I won't go over the story, but certainly it's one of my favorite films, too. And there's a whole connection with the social issues of the day, blacklisting, that were going on at the time. So you might say there was a hidden agenda. If you look between the, not between the lines, but between the images or whatever, there was a statement about the kind of thing that was going on, this blacklisting, this scapegoating, that was so unfair, unrealistic, terrible time in the society of America after World War II, when everybody under the bed or around the wall or next door was thought to be a communist. And, of course, communists want to kill us all. They're all terrorists. Does this sound familiar? Okay. The Arab American News has reported this week, too, about a number of times when ICE units, that's too glamorous for them, they're the Border Patrol people, customs people, whatever, they've gone into just establishments, into a home in Dearborn. They're not giving any reason why, and they began interviewing and searching and so on, as if those people were terrorists, and maybe they are, but, you know, and then they even did it at a restaurant in Ann Arbor. A restaurant in Ann Arbor, they went in and just they closed down the whole restaurant and started interrogating everybody there. This is just getting a little bit too obtrusive. But, you know, you hire these people. They got to do something with their time and with all their high technology stuff and their padded vests and so on. And seriously, it's a problem of any bureaucracy. Once you get it set up, it's got to justify itself, even if it has nothing to do. Sort of like our state legislature. As you know, our lieutenant governor, Kelly, has suggested just 2 days ago at the Mackinac Conference Policy Conference Center for rich people, apparently, and politicians, same difference, at Mackinac Island, he suggested that our legislature should become part-time. Here is Jack Lessenberry's comment about the part-time legislature and Lieutenant Governor Cowley's suggestion.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. H.L. Mencken, the great early 20th century journalist, was a militant atheist, so I don't suppose there's any chance his shade is flitting around Mackinac Island this week. But if it was, it would have been laughing at Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly's grand announcement yesterday that he would lead a campaign to give us a part-time legislature. That instantly reminded me of Mencken's famous observation that for every human problem, there's a solution that is neat, plausible, and wrong. Now, we do indeed have a dysfunctional legislature. For years, they failed to fix the state's infrastructure, which is falling apart. Yesterday, our full-time elected representatives seemed mainly interested in passing a law so that people can carry concealed guns without a permit or any safety training. Cutting these characters' pay, denying them pensions, and allowing them to meet for only 90 days a year seems too good for them. But Callie has come up with the one solution that would almost certainly make matters worse. What's really going on is this. Callie wants to run for governor next year, but he's a severe underdog to Bill Schuette, the attorney general. Schuette, who's been running hard, if unofficially, for a long time, was first elected to Congress when Callie was 7 years old. The lieutenant governor not only has to cope with the stigma of being the number two man in the administration that poisoned Flint, he could walk into any major shopping mall with a good chance that nobody would recognize him. He badly needs a vehicle to get noticed. So yesterday, in language that seemed to mimic the speaking style of his party's maximum leader, the 39-year-old Calley promised the most high-tech, effective, grassroots campaign to amend Michigan's Constitution ever. A bigly huge effort, in other words. Surrounded by a core of 20-somethings who somehow all spontaneously showed up wearing identical blue and white t-shirts saying, "Clean it up," Calley promised to make Michigan government much more effective and efficient. Well, we all want that. And politically, there's a certain shrewdness to this. The legislature is hugely unpopular, but Calley's proposal would make things worse. Since they could only meet for a few weeks every year and wouldn't be paid enough to live on, all our lawmakers would have to be retired or have full-time jobs. Not many jobs allow you to take off for a few weeks every so often, nor is anyone seriously going to cripple their career for a part-time political job that can only last 6 to 8 years. So what we would get is incompetence and lobbyists. This would also amount to a serious transfer of power away from the people's directly elected representatives to the governor and especially to the special interests. If Calley had come out in favor of eliminating term limits as part of this, his proposal for a part-time legislature might have some merit, but he made it clear he's not interested in that. By the way, if this does somehow become law, Calley could be in big trouble if he doesn't become governor. He'll not only be out of a job, but his wife Julie now holds his old seat in the Michigan House, and her husband is backing a proposal that would drastically cut her pay.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
So there's the story on that one. I don't know what you think about that. My personal feeling, and a lot of people have said on part-time legislature, we already have a part-time legislature. They have more days off than the often vilified, unjustifiably so, teachers in terms of a whole week's off when they're not in session. I know they're back campaigning, getting in touch with the people that elected them. Yeah, right. It doesn't seem to work, does it? I mean, they're not very representative either in Michigan or in the U.S. Congress of the people of the United States because of gerrymandering, which is their responsibility. They mucked it up, the people who were in power at the time, back in 2010, which was Republicans, both nationally and in the states. Most state legislatures are dominated by Republicans. And so they're the ones that gerrymandered, that redesigned the districts to benefit themselves and their continuation, even if a majority of people didn't want them to represent them. So anyway, that's something we've mentioned before, and that's crazy too. However, you know, they only work Monday through Thursdays too in Lansing. So it's not just how many weeks they have off for vacations or reconnecting with their districts back home. But good points made by Jack Lessenberry too. If you don't make it a full-time job or a full-time career, people won't get better at it. Someone did suggest somewhere that you can't have part-time legislature unless you put in some guidelines about, number one, no lobbyist can be elected as a legislator. No one after they are a legislator can become a lobbyist. And term limits are removed, which means you can stay there as long as you get reelected. That way it's something more to look forward to in terms of a part-time job. And so many people have part-time jobs these days and somehow survive at the poverty level. You know, not just retired seniors or whatever, a lot of young people, that what's wrong with being a person in a part-time job as a legislator living in poverty in Lansing? I mean, maybe we'll get some decent bills for the impoverished, you know, in their short work time, you know, in their part-time status. I mean, you can't possibly have anything that's better than more significant than that. And there are some part-time legislatures in the United States, in some states, and they get by with it somehow. And they do get professionals, you might say. No, the average person struggling may not want to choose it. I said, sort of as a joke, you'd be part-time and live in poverty in Lansing. That probably wouldn't work out. That poverty almost never works out for anyone. Although I think they get free health care if you're elected, right? Everybody in the state legislature gets free, complete health care, just like they do in the U.S. Congress. You know, what is, you know, in other words, Medicare for All, also known as universal single payer. So all of our elected Congress people, they get what everybody else wants. That's a heck of a benefit, you know, even if you're impoverished. Well, we'll see where that goes. Again, Brian Calley has a problem, although I've met him a couple times in person. He seems like a very nice person. He doesn't have much established name or face recognition, and that holds him back as a Republican nominee for the next governor. Okay. A lot of different candidates are being announced for the Democrat nomination for governor. Again, that election will not happen this year. It's next November 2018, but the candidates are coming out of the woodwork, so to speak. And what is that a metaphor for? What kind of creature comes out of the woodwork? You fill in the blank there. What I have is an article from the Metro Times, okay? And Metro Times, available for free in a variety of places around town. Look for it. Ask about it. There's copies here on the Henry Ford College campus, Monday through Thursday. You could pick one up, and our Student Center building has a rack and so on. That's where I got my copy today, even. And always has an editorial comment by Jack Lessenberry in it, which is different than his comments for Michigan Public Radio, because he can't, on Michigan Public Radio, he, believe it or not, he has strong opinions, but he tries to stay somewhat more balanced. But in Metro Times, he really lets go. And I do highly recommend, of course, their cover article, and pretty much all of their six or seven or eight articles each week are fantastic examples of investigative reporting, but also with the reporter expressing their own opinions, too. So you get the facts. You also get the reporter's assessment, analysis, and some of their opinions. But you know what you're getting. I mean, you can tell, okay? And they have a major story, as they always do, where the lead story about Belle Isle's Grand Prix, Detroit's Grand Prix race, which is this weekend, by the way. So it's going to be very busy at Belle Isle. I'm not sure if there'll be room to get in even. But it really is succeeding as a park for us now that the state made it an official state park. There is an entry fee, of course, to get across the bridge into Belle Isle. But it's really been fixed up, and it's doing a great thing. And this race has been going on for a while, but there's controversy. And, of course, is it bad for the environment? Who does the race benefit? So this is a great article. You can have to read it for yourself because it's about 10,000 words, but it's free in the Metro Times and on their website, of course, metrotimes.com. Just the headline is, as Belle Isle's Grand Prix hits a crossroads, gearheads and parkgoers tussle for its future. And the subtitle is, gentlemen, stop your engines. Usually they say that at the start of some races. Gentlemen, start your engines. But in this case, the article begins with, gentlemen, stop your engines. Here's the Jack Lessenberry's editorial comment, opinion from the Metro Times this week. Governor Abdul, the man running for the Democratic nomination for governor, is a dream candidate but faces an uphill battle. Here's Jack Lessenberry's opinion. Let's say you had a young politician named Adam Elliott, who is handsome, charismatic, and whose string of degrees and accomplishments sounded like those of a spy fiction hero, such as three-letter athlete in high school, Bloomfield Hills, Andover High School, star lacrosse player, and academically at the very top of his class at the University of Michigan, where he graduated with dual degrees in biology and political science. That was followed, naturally, says Jack Lessenberry, by stints as a Rhodes Scholar, then a Marshall Scholar in England. Even before that, when he gave the student address at his U of M commencement, it wowed the main speaker, one Bill Clinton, president at the time, who urged him to forget medicine and go into politics. You're a natural, Slick Willie said. Not yet, thought Elliott, who then quickly took master's and PhD degrees from Oxford University in England and then an MD from Columbia. Just in case anyone thought it wasn't enough, he led a medical mission to Peru as a student and became an assistant professor of epidemiology at Columbia. Somehow, in his spare time, he managed to win research awards and pump out more than 100 scientific publications from book chapters to major papers. He wasn't chasing women. He married at 21 to a 19-year-old classmate who is now a psychiatrist. He was in charge of a global research analytics for population health project at Columbia when Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan, called and invited him to come back and rebuild the Detroit Health Department after the bankruptcy. No problem, says Elliot, who was born here. Not only did he have it whipped into shape in barely a year, he then took on the disgraceful Animal Control Department and fixed that too. Finally, Adam Elliott decides it's time to go from retail saving of the planet into wholesale, leaves his health department job, and jumps into politics full-time. Not, that is, in an attempt to get a seat on the Detroit City Council or an utterly worthless one in the gerrymandered legislature. Nope. He's running for the Democratic nomination for governor. By the way, despite everything he's accomplished, he is still only 32 years old. So, is this the Democratic Party's all-time too-good-to-be-true dream of a candidate? Well, maybe except for two little details, as Jack Lessenberry points out here. His name is really Abdul El Sayed, and he is a Muslim with a wife who wears a headscarf. That wouldn't matter in a world where we didn't discriminate based on religion, but in Michigan, we do, says Jack Lessenberry. Last fall, Michigan Democrats nominated Ismail Ahmed for a seat on the State Board of Education. There wasn't a more deserving candidate, and this is Jack Lessenberry saying this. We all know Ismail Ahmed here locally in Dearborn. But Lessenberry says there wasn't a more deserving candidate in the state or a more completely American Muslim in the nation. Ish, as everyone knows him, cares passionately about two things, his community and education. He helped found Access, the highly successful Arab Community Center for Economic and Social Services in 1971, ran it for many years, and built it into one of the nation's best and most studied private welfare agencies. Later, he was made head of Michigan's Department of Health and Human Services. That was under Jennifer Granholm. After that, he became associate provost at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. He is exactly the kind of person you want on the State Board of Education. Yet, not only did he lose, thousands of Democratic voters refused to support him. His running mate, John Austin, got almost 2 million votes. Ahmed, a mere 1,698,000. Nearly a quarter of a million Democrats refused to support Ahmed, evidently just because he's a Muslim. Most don't seem to have voted Republican for that job instead. They just didn't cast a second education board seat vote at all. If they won't vote for a Muslim for a job as low profile and benign as state education board, do you think they'd vote for one for governor? Ish said, quote, I think there's something to be learned from my experience. By the way, Ismail Ahmed has not endorsed anyone for governor yet. He went on to say, Ish said, I think Sayed faces an uphill battle, unquote. Back to Lessenberry. Abdul, he encourages everyone to call him Abdul, refuses to be daunted by all that. Quote from Abdul, I'm a different person with a different personality. Lessenberry says that's true enough. To be sure, El Sayed comes across as far more peppy. He claims to be going into this with his eyes wide open. Quote, I know that for 95% of the people I meet, my name is a liability, unquote. He told me one recent morning over coffee in downtown Detroit near the new Illich playpen with taxpayer-subsidized construction activity bustling all around us. Abdul went on, but one thing is that they won't forget the name Abdul, he said. Lessenberry says that's something that's probably true. Another quote from Abdul, and if I can just connect with them, well, he says he thinks he can win them over. That way, well, me, largely true. It's a very winning personality. His positions on most issues ought to be appealing to most Democrats, especially Bernie Sanders fans. Matter of fact, I didn't disagree with one of them. Trouble is, he'd have to win over about 400,000 people to win a Democratic primary, and at least four times that to have a chance of beating Bill Schulte. I always have difficulties with people's names who I don't respect too much. Sorry about that. Bill is our attorney general right now and has had a lot of positions that, he's not directly connected to the Flint scandal that the governor and Cali are as much, but, some of the things he's done as attorney general just turn my stomach, and he's definitely the wrong candidate for attorney general ever again, in my humble opinion. Remember, all opinions on this show, the new WHFR Journal, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, students, or administrators. But I just had an opinion, and I let you know it was my opinion. Remember, don't take my opinions for truth or fact, and don't go acting on them unless you can verify them for yourself with more information, okay? If you don't know about Bill Schulte's, it's not spelled that way. It's spelled Schuett, Bill Schuett. Of course, he never says that, Schulte. Okay, people never want their names pronounced in the worst possible way, of course. They learn that as they're growing up. Jack Lesenberry goes on here mentioning Brian Stone, who we interviewed on the show, and he was running for a legislative position last year. And Lesenberry mentions him here. Democratic strategist Brian Stone is anything but anti-Muslim. He courted Arab-American support during a failed bid for the legislature last year. He told me that when he came out as openly gay in high school, Muslim students were among the few who didn't pick on or bully him. Yet Stone isn't supporting Abdul al-Sayed for an entirely different reason. He doesn't question his awesome intelligence. But he notes that as a candidate, he has pretty close to zero practical political experience. Quote, from Stone, Granholm, Snyder, and Trump all lacked legislative experience and lacked an understanding of the political landscape. And then he also said, their administrations have all been bogged down, unquote. Plus, he adds, achieving change in a big city health department where everyone is a Democrat is very different from doing it in the state where half the residents will question your intentions no matter who you are, unquote. By the way, you mentioned Jennifer Granholm. What was she before she ran for governor? Attorney General. So I guess Brian Stone is sort of backstabbing Bill Schulte here, too. Of course, Stone, a Democrat, probably would anyway, in metaphor. She was Attorney General for a while. So wasn't she? That sounds awfully frank. Could be wrong about that. Was she merely an attorney in the city of Detroit, Wayne County or something? Maybe that was true. Yeah, okay. Concluding the Jack Lesenberry commentary from Metro Times, he said that Stone may have legitimate arguments, but on the other hand, Abdul's main rivals for the nomination are likely to be Mark Bernstein, or is it Bernstein, the lawyer and U of M regent, not the Bernstein who got on the Supreme Court. Related? Yes, same law firm. But not the same one. And, of course, Gretchen Whitmer has been mentioned. So we have al-Sayed, Gretchen Whitmer, who was in the legislature a long time, a lot of experience, very charismatic, very knowledgeable, and Mark Bernstein, who's just been announced with his intent. And he apparently has a lot of big money backers, and that makes a difference when you're running for a governor. You have to have money to be a politician or have a lot of people support who are rich support you, unfortunately, and then you're beholden to them, aren't you? Ooh. Anyway, as Jack Lesenberry points out, Bernstein has absolutely no Lansing experience. Whitmer does have that experience, but as a member of a perpetual minority caucus that was unsuccessful at forging many compromises or getting very much passed. So what is going to happen? I can imagine a scenario where al-Sayed wins a close multi-candidate primary only to lose in November. But then, what do I know? 10 years ago, this is Lesenberry, I explained patiently to a student ready to dedicate herself to a candidate that as much as I liked what he stood for, his cause was hopeless and she needed to face it. There was no way that the still fundamentally racist American people were going to vote for a black guy, I told her, let alone one with a Muslim father and an exotic African name. I'm sure all of my listeners can figure out who that person was that he thought didn't have a chance in the world. Of course, a lot of people, Barack Obama, of course, a lot of people said that about Donald Trump, too, didn't they? Didn't have a chance in the world. And here we are. So we're about 3 minutes before 2 o'clock here on the new WHFR Journal. And Kitty Love is ready to start Highway 61, that drive up the historic Highway 61 highway. With the best in the blues until 4 o'clock today. She does not have her first CD in there, but she's waiting for me to play the theme song for her. So that gives her time to put the first CD in. Let's see what else is happening here real fast. Okay. All right. I just have to mention this. Real fast, there's an opinion piece, a special report, and this is amazing, but the Arab American News, it actually has investigative reporters. They have a story in this week's edition about how the alleyways, which are used by businesses and residents in East Dearborn, are in terrible condition, but in West Dearborn, they're really good condition. Why is that? Is somebody playing favorites there? It's a good size article, and there's a lot of information there. And if you have a report a problem with your alleyway, you can talk to the Public Works Department, of course, 313-943-2107. Great story, great investigative job. I mean, you know, the mayor or others may say, well, it's unfair. We're doing what we can. But, by direct comparison, there's some problems with East Dearborn. Spirit Fest Dearborn Heights coming up next weekend, not this weekend. We'll tell you more about it next Friday, but it'll already be started. And League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights is not in favor of Line 5. That's the oil pipeline cutting across from the Upper Peninsula to the Lower Peninsula, which is very old and is not following all the inspection reports that they're supposed to have. And League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights has taken a position to shut it down. Shut it down now before there's a major disaster that ruins the water for all of us in the state of Michigan. It'll be that bad if this thing ruptures. That much oil is going through there every day right now. And it's just not safe, according to a lot of people who have studied it, who are concerned about the environment. Not many of those people are in power right now, but there's a great story there. And where did I get this? Not Sierra Club this time, although I could have go to the Sierra Club of Michigan website and find a similar story. This is MLive.com. So this is a new document, a new study showed that Enbridge, who owns Line 5, was violating the easement for years. Brand new today on MLive.com. So another reason to shut that down. And there is a proposal in the legislature to do that, except it was from the Democrats. Not a chance in the world that the environment-hating Republicans are going to do anything about that. Too bad, I say. But hope you have a good weekend anyway. And come on back again for the new WHFR Journal. Let next week, Friday. Or go to our podcast at any time, of course. And that is at WHFR.FM. Thank you for listening today. This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for Highway 61.